Randis, how you doing?
What's up, James? How are you?
I'm doing all right.
You sound all right?
Yeah, sounds good.
You sound good? Yeah, then we're good to go. I know your time's always a bit limited, so...
Let me get a little light on this, actually. Properly. Here we go. That's better.
How you been?
Chilly. It's a little bit cool out here.
I know, I'm the same way.
You look pretty chilly, too.
Yeah, it's. I just came from a basketball practice. I coach my daughter and my son's teams.
Oh, nice. How are they doing?
They're doing good. I mean, they're. I love coaching. You can use some of your communication skills, and you get to know the kids. You feel like you're involved.
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes: a good coach can change a game. A great coach can change a life. And I feel like I get to be a part of their life journey. You know, not just their sports journey, but I get to be a mentor to some sense and hopefully give them some useful advice. And that's definitely something I think kids don't have enough of, is like adults who will take the time to listen and talk to them and get through to them.
Role model.
Yeah.
That's the real teaching. Yeah.
I wouldn't call myself a role model, but that's a lot of pressure.
Well, don't think of it that way, but you are modeling how to be a mentor, which is important for young children to see.
Yeah, and that reminds me of another quote, which I use all the time, and I give credit to you. You're the one who said it initially, was kids don't do what you say, they do what you do. I think, is that your quote?
Yeah. Well, something along those lines. Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. I mean, like it or not, you know, you're people are watching, you know, the way you're behaving and the way you're acting, and they're gonna, you know, that's why I always say, like, fat kids, fat parents typically, fit kids, fit parents. A lot of times it's just kids adopting the way of life of...
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into that, genetics as well as the food diet that they're obviously all consuming. But yeah, they definitely see the habits and it becomes the norm. And that's one thing that I never really thought about when I was growing up was, I mean, you kind of can consciously be aware of it, but you don't really think about it. Like, my family is not the way everybody lives, right? And I had two loving, supportive parents who took care of us and gave us everything that we could possibly need to grow and to thrive and were there for us and supported us. So I, you know, my default is to tend to assume, oh, yeah, that's probably what most households are like. No, that is not what most households are like. So you have to live a little and see more of the world to understand just how special your circumstances are.
Yeah, and that's something that's really interesting and important, too, is like this idea of like what is normal, right? Like, normal is different to everybody. And I guess we can jump right into some of the topics. I wanted to do a special question for Corbett's show where I just ask you a bunch of questions and just kind of get your take on it. One of them is the Epstein tape that came out with Bannon. And let me get you before, you know, I guess there's no point in me sharing my take. Let me get your take. I'm kind of interested on things that maybe stuck out, things that maybe you found interesting, things that like, not that, I mean, I guess in some sense, I'm asking you to psychoanalyze them, but like this idea of like, you know, was there any hints of his character or the way he answered things or any of the stories he told that maybe shined a light on who he was as a person that maybe you didn't know before?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are some very specific things. Like, for example, I should have known this, but I did not know that he was a member of the Trilateral Commission there from apparently the inception of the Trilateral Commission, at least the way he told it, something like that. It couldn't be possible that he was there in the late 70s when it was, because he was nobody back then, but I don't know. Anyway, he said he went there in the 90s. I should have known that, but I was just learning that from that interview. But I would be hesitant to take too much out of the way that he is portraying himself in this interview, because this is very explicitly a PR project to resuscitate his image. And I haven't looked into all the details of specifically how he had contracted Bannon to do this. And, you know, I'm sure Bannon says, oh, he was going to make a documentary about how big a monster Epstein was. Yeah, that's what he was doing. But it's a very glad-handing interview in a lot of ways. Still, having said that, so this is a PR effort, so let's not take it completely at face value. But there are some interesting insights. I mean, hell, for one, he admits what we, again, all should know by this point, that the Federal Reserve is a complete load of hooey that uses financial wizardry and subterfuge to do what it does. Again, we conspiracy realist should know that, but you know, it's always vindicating to hear it confirmed by one of the insiders. But having said that, so I actually haven't finished the last 15 minutes of this interview, so I still have to do that. But I am going to be writing about this specifically in my newsletter this weekend, things that I've learned from this new Epstein files dump, and I'm still looking and finding new things and things that I didn't know about. So if there's anyone in your audience who knows any sort of tips or things that are worth investigating from this big 3 million document Epstein dump, let me know. People tend to assume I know everything. I've seen everything. I know you've already seen this, James, but well, no, I can't read 3 million documents myself. So if you have anything that sticks out to you, let me know.
Well, one, it's a compliment that everybody assumes you know everything. That's probably a compliment. So if you didn't get to the end of it, that's the part that's kind of fascinating to me, because initially that's kind of what I assumed too. I'm like, okay, if this is a part of a documentary, how much of like the nitty gritty are they really going to get into? Or is this mm-hmm. just going to be a barely scratch the surface type thing just to kind of make him look intelligent and polite and whatnot? But at the end of the interview, which was funny because I didn't finish it either. And then I saw a clip circulating that I didn't see yet, but I'm like hour and 15 minutes. I'm like, where is this clip? So I'm like, I got to go back and finish watching it. And at the end of it, they talk about the devil. And if he thought he was the devil, he like specifically asks him if he thinks he's a devil. And he's like, oh, what do you mean? You know, he's like, well, you got the traits of a devil. Then he talked about like the things that he's been accused of. He's like, you've been locked up for this and that, and almost ask him if he felt any remorse or whatever. The crazy thing is he so casually talked about being in jail and the things that he was in jail for. And like he had zero remorse of it. And then the other thing that was really interesting, and I think I told you via email, like how polite he seemed, but it almost seemed like one of those true crime documentaries where they're interviewing the psychopath killer and they're really polite.
Yeah.
But they're psychopaths.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the way I'm looking at this. Again, I'm not going to say that I've seen into his soul or I know him from this PR staged sit down documentary. I mean, clearly he's trying to present a certain version of himself that he apparently could present when he needed to. But again, listen to anyone who met him or talked to him. Again, this is all coming, I guess, post the revelation of who he was. But a lot of people have said that just from the very beginning, he was lewd, crude, and ultimately, you know, immediately creepy and disgusting. So there's been enough vindication of that from enough different sources that I think that's probably generally true, that he did not have any interest in formality or politeness or anything of that sort. So I think what we are seeing here is a very studied attempt to try to put forward a certain version of himself for the documentary camera.
Yeah, but I do believe if you talk long enough, some of who you are might accidentally come out. And how casually he talked about the things he was in jail for, and it just you could tell there's a detachment to his crimes. Like he didn't. There's no guilt. But one thing that was fascinating was that a lot of experts talk about how they thought he was a fraud. Right? You heard. Brett Weinstein talk about this and whatnot, and how he didn't seem that intelligent. But one thing that did seem interesting to me was his explanation on systems, right? Because I tend to have similar philosophy that a lot of times experts are flawed in understanding a whole system because you focus on one thing, you don't understand how the whole system works. I'm curious if that's one of the ways he's impressed some of the Wall Street guys or some of the scientists or whatever. It's like he had this, you know, and really using the metaphor of the human body, it's true. Like if I go to a hand expert, he doesn't know anything about how my lungs work. If I go to a lung expert, he doesn't know if I tear an ACL, what that's about, or how do you fix that or recover, you know? So it's like there's very little understanding of how the whole systems work. And it seems like he seemed very intrigued with that. And I don't know if that's one of his worldviews that he used to try to, or one of his worldviews on why he tried to get involved with so many different things, because he wanted to control or manipulate the whole system. So he was involved with fashion, with Wall Street, with science, with all these things. I mean, what was your takeaway?
Yes, I think what you're pointing to is a fact that, again, like when we talk about, for example, a psychopath, we are talking about a person who has different traits and inclinations and interests and other such things. And you can have very smart, high-level functioning psychopaths who are extremely shrewd and calculating and able to make money and function in various ways. You can have bumbling psychopaths who are just whatever, garden run-of-the-mill failed serial killers who end up in jail very quickly, and everything in between. The defining trait of psychopathy doesn't define the characteristics of how that psychopathy manifests itself in a person's character. And so it's very possible, yes, Epstein was a very shrewd person in a number of ways, obviously to be able to manipulate various people and know what makes them tick. And perhaps it is that general curiosity of what makes these things tick that motivated Epstein. But the real question is, well, what was he figuring this out for? What was the purpose of it? And so in my case, I think what's interesting about Epstein's obvious, for example, interest in science is I think he was motivated by a eugenical philosophy. I mean, this is the reason he was creating the breeding program in his Santa Fe, you know, bunker that he was creating there. He wanted to impregnate as many women as possible to start a breeding program to carry on his genes. That's why he was hanging out with Frank Church and these other modern day eugenicists. He was very interested in that. So from that interest, he wants to network and draw into his network all the highest level scientists that he can. To talk about these things, or high level, like high energy physics and other such things that could be important for quantum computing and other things that will lead to the transhuman nightmare that we know he was also interested in. So again, I'm sure he was smart in his own way, or at least in certain ways. But the question is, what was he using that for? And I think it was quite obviously all about manipulation and control.
It was. And so who do you think... So was his motivation, what was his motivation? Because obviously you've done a lot of research onto this, and a lot of people, Whitney Webb, our mutual friend, and many others have done, but it's hard to pinpoint exactly what his motivation was. This video was interesting because he talked a little bit about the metaphysical, like a little bit of, not understanding reality and gravity and quantum physics. And I think he said in the video, if anybody tells you they understand quantum physics, he's like, they don't understand quantum physics. And he's not the first one to say that, but it's like he had some type of understanding that a lot of what we say is the explanations to everything are just assumptions. And black matter, we came up with that term to explain the unexplainable, but it's still unexplainable. Experts will use terms to explain the unexplainable. And then you assume because they made up that term, they must have some explanation on what it is, and they don't. So that was fascinating about like his outlook and kind of understanding of that.
Yeah. And I think that probably, again, goes to show that this is a man who dealt in BS and could probably detect BS when it was being thrown at him. So he was, even when he was around these high level physicists and others, he probably had some ability to sort out the ones who were completely just BSing their way through things and the people who were at least going to be honest about what they don't do and don't know and what they do and don't understand. And that was, again, an interesting part of that interview that I saw was when Bannon was constantly trying to going back to, but you understand this financial system better than anyone and you understand what's going on. You understood this. So how do you explain the 2008 financial crisis? And Epstein was trying to make the point, well, it's easy to try to put some sort of narrative on it after the fact, but in the chaos of the moment, it's a chaotic system. So you can't precisely determine everything. And I think that's what a horrible thing to say, but it's the more honest way of looking at these things, isn't it? And that's actually the interesting part about this, if you think about it, is that, yeah, these people who rely on manipulation and deception and giving people partial truths or hanging things in front of them in order to make them do this or that, the people who are into power and control in that way probably have to have good BS detectors and have to understand the value of being honest with themselves about certain things, like what they do and don't know, because you will be more effective if you're not deceiving yourself. And then you can more effectively deceive others, I guess, would be the way that the psychopath would think of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess what I was wondering was, because I was watching it, I'm like, it kind of sounds like, because the way he was talking about math and him trying to understand the unexplainable and systems, it almost sounds like, the stories you hear about like secret societies trying to understand the nature of reality and suppressing that information from us, not wanting us to think about the metaphysical world. You know, some people have made the argument that that's why there's a war on religion or spirituality, because they want you to be just materialistic machines that just feed the machine, and you don't zoom out and ask those bigger questions. So like that, you know, I was trying to figure out, I'm like, is that what he's into? Is that, was he a part of some, because he seemed like, again, the Trilateral Committee, the Santa Fe Institute, the Rockefellers. I mean, he was involved with so many of these people who were either in secret societies or part of these secret societies or founded secret societies, that I'm like, I wonder if this is a glimpse of some of the stuff they talk about or suppress the public.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I assume it is, right? I mean, again, this is a PR effort, so we have to take that into account. But yes, I mean, this does sound like the type of thing that he has talked about before, at any rate, with other people. So, but also, I mean, just this is more of an intuitive level sense with me rather than something that I could point to specifically. But I do get the sense that he is someone who has had the chance to talk to physicists and others and likes to talk about these things. But I assume he's still at the Popsci level of understanding here. It's not like he's really delving into the mathematics of quantum physics and other such things. He just sort of understands the explanations that he has no doubt been told by many scientists or popularizers of science. But I don't think he's actually, you know, able to do the work himself.
Now, do you think, I mean, there's obviously links to Mossad, and he has a very shadowy beginning to his success, because it seems like it takes a huge leap out of nowhere. Do you think, was he working CIA, Mossad, was there a primary funder or a supporter of what he was doing, or do you think he was maybe a pawn in a bigger game? Like, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, luckily, we don't have to speculate on that anymore, Ricky, because I don't know if you saw, but the Daily Mail has cracked the case. Epstein's sex empire was KGB honeytrap. Pedophile financier had multiple talks with Putin after conviction, with Russian girls flown in to harvest compromat on world famous figures. And what was the first story that I saw get pushed out absolutely everywhere from this new document dump was Bill Gates. Bill Gates had contracted an STD from the Russian girls that he had been procured. He had procured through Epstein or whatever, and had written or had wanted Epstein to get him antibiotics that he could then surreptitiously slip to Melinda. Right? This is the big crazy headline that came out as I saw one of the first big stories that got reported out of this. But when you look into it, actually, what is this about? It's an email that Epstein had written to himself and saved as a draft in his drafts of emails. And it is from the perspective of someone who is resigning from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So what? Did Epstein work for the Bill? No, of course not. So what was this? And people are speculating it's a potential, like, resignation letter that Epstein was helping this scientific advisor who was working with Bill Gates used for his resignation, where he was putting in these things about, you know, the Russian girls and STD and antibiotics and stuff. But again, this is all just coming from a draft of an email that Epstein was writing to himself. So here's the thing. I have multiple times played and laughed at the clip of candidate Trump in 2024, when he was questioned about the Epstein files, would you release them? And he's like, maybe, why not? But you got to be careful. There's a lot of phony stuff in there in those files. Well, you know what? Okay. He's probably true. There probably is a lot of phony stuff and false trails that will get over sensationalized and overly reported in the mainstream so that they can then be debunked later. Like, oh my God, did you hear about, you know, Trump raping the 13-year-old and other such things? Well, again, this is coming from anonymous tips that the FBI had received, that they had in these documents that they're itemizing what, you know, the tips that they'd received. They're not even, this isn't even the investigation into those tips. It's only, we received this report from an anonymous source and no further information provided. So again, take it for what it's worth. Is it true? Well, I guess it could be, but it's probably not. And it will probably be eventually debunked so that they can go, see, look, it's all fake. So, you know, Russian girls and Bill Gates compromat and KGB and Putin influence. gets seeded out there as the big story, right? Whereas in reality, yes, if Epstein had sources in or was part of another intelligence agency, it would not be the KGB would be our first suspect, right? Closer to reality, you could go to a source like thecradle.co, which points to an FBI memo that concludes Trump had been compromised by Israel. New Epstein file show. Yeah, surprise, surprise. And again, take this for what it's worth. It's coming from a confidential human source reporting to the Bureau. But this source had indicated that Chabad Lubavitch, the Hasidic Judaic movement, had compromised, was compromising the Trump 1.0 administration through Kushner, first and foremost, but was also saying that they believed that Epstein was a Mossad agent. And that lines up with a lot of things that we've known. If people want just the sort of visual shorthand for that, you can point to that that picture that's been circulating of Epstein on his private jet with the IDF, you know, t-shirt, whatever, like, hey, you know, I'm a big Israel Defense Force supporter. But more serious investigation, people should probably be checking out DropSite News, which has been breaking story after story after story about Epstein's links to Israel and Israeli intelligence and Israeli figures and Dershowitz and all of this. There's been a number of reports on this, meeting with, you know, Israeli ambassadors, and obviously probably the most high profile Israeli directly implicated in Epstein was Ehud Barak, former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak, who was not only in the Black Book and features prominently in a number of files, but I did read Virginia Roberts Giuffre's posthumously published autobiography, or her memoir, where she was talking about having been raped brutally. The most brutal rape that she had ever received was from the hands of this high-ranking foreign minister, I believe is, or no, what did she say? So I had both the audiobook and I had an ebook of this, and I was listening to it and I was reading it and I was doing both. And interestingly, by the time the ebook had been converted into audiobook, I believe he was being referred to as a high-ranking minister or something like that. But then it became like government official or something, like something even more vague. But it was clearly, she's clearly talking about Ehud Barak. But the publisher wasn't going to publish Ehud Barak because obviously that would leave them open to a lawsuit. But, you know, and there was just something that I saw the other day, and I'll have to dig this up. But from a different file that was just released, someone talking about Ehud Barak raping them to the point of disassociation, and they, you know, were trying to commit suicide and stuff, whatever. So anyway, Epstein, very, 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 very tied into Israel, which shouldn't be a surprise because, again, we know all of the various connections, like, for example, the most obvious one, Glenn, whose father, Robert Maxwell, was obviously tied to Israeli intelligence, had a big, you know, Israeli state-sponsored memorial service, whatever, after his odd death at sea. You know, he was Israel intelligence. And then Glenn Maxwell ends up hooking up with Epstein, and the rest is history. And now, of course, she's, you know, living it up at Club Fed, getting transferred to lighter and lighter prison because she's willing to spill the beans on everybody except Trump. I never saw him implicated in anything. And now Trump is, you know, basically giving her the light gloves treatment, which, again, makes sense and lines up with, if the Trump administration is compromised by Israel, and if Epstein was essentially an Israeli honey trap, well, there we go. But don't worry, guys. The Daily Mail is going to tell you it was all the KGB.
Yeah, that's something that's always fascinating, and I think a little bit telling, is somebody who, like Trump, who always tries to be the alpha male in the room. When Bibi's in the room, he's super polite. But the people pull out the chair for him. So it's like, it seems to be that he's got something on everybody, and it's incredible the pull that he has. I mean, the fake Trump Charlie Kirk picture that went around with the Israeli flag, you probably didn't see that because you're not on X, but you're not missing a whole lot. It's a lot of nonsense.
Something. I know. I'm not there.
I'm not trying to make you feel like you're missing out, because you're not. But the Trump administration tweeted out, and it was a picture of Charlie and Trump like hugging with like the Israeli flag behind him, and then come to find out it was like a fake picture, or at least it wasn't a fake picture. It was just somebody inputted the Israeli flag in the background. You've done this work for a long time, and I've enjoyed your work and other people in this community's work for a long time. And something that I feel like I've kind of looked over, like maybe too much, and now I'm starting to rethink, is the influence of Mossad. I always knew they had a lot of influence, right? You talk about 9/11, and you talk about the dancing Israelis and their links to Mossad. So many historical things. JFK's links to Mossad, potentially, like all these theories, and there always seems to be Mossad somewhere in the story. And there seems to be some hints that maybe they were involved in all these things, all the assassinations, right? Like in Iran, all the, what is it, the nuclear scientists that don't live till, don't ever get to the age of 30 because they're all being assassinated. And there's just a huge list of potential assassinations linked to Mossad. And then the Charlie Kirk thing happened. And you start connecting the dots, and you're like, wow, there's something really weird about BB coming out and you know, doing like a press tour after this. There's something really weird about, like, right before this, with that whole Florida story where Charlie Kirk had Candace and Tucker come out, and then all his funders threaten him and all this stuff. And then he's doing interviews on PBD podcasts, on Megyn Kelly, and all these, and where he's questioning October 7th, and which is a big no-no. You can't question October 7th. You know, false flags don't happen in Israel. No, but he's questioning October, and he's doing all these things knowing that a huge portion of his funding is coming from Zionists or people linked to Zionists. And then the Charlie Kirk thing happens, and which was an obvious cover-up. I mean, anybody who believes the official story is a crazy person, because there's no way. That can't be an entry wound and exit wound. I mean, none of it makes any sense. It's like, wait, he shot from where? But like, that doesn't, there's no way that can be a entry wound. Where's the exit wound? You know, so there's all these things that make no sense. And you're just like, did they just publicly assassinate somebody and send a message to anybody who questions them? I haven't heard you, and maybe you have, and my apologies if you have talked about it and I've missed it. I haven't heard you talk about the Charlie Kirk assassination. What's your thoughts on it? Do you think that Candace Owens is crazy, or do you think that maybe you can, well, both can be true. You can think she's crazy and believe that she might be onto something. But what's your thoughts?
No, I haven't really investigated the Kirk shooting at all. And I am not particularly inclined to. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. I don't care. Am I allowed to say that? I really don't care. And the reason I say that is because it is a fact that I spent exactly 0 minutes and 0 seconds of my entire life ever listening to, thinking about Charlie Kirk at all before he was killed. So it seems to me that it would be me being led along by the nose, by the news cycle, to then, okay, now that this person has died in this, you know, public way, now I'm going to start researching and devoting my life to him. Seems a bit odd. And I dislike the way that, at least for myself, I want to preserve my own cognitive territory. I didn't know Charlie Kirk from Adam before he was killed. Never spent a single second in my entire life ever listening to a single word he ever said. I'm not going to start now. I don't care. Having said that, I'm sure it's a, you know, fascinating story, and I'm sure there's a million things to explore there. So go right at it. And I'm all in support of everyone out there who is trying to dig up information. The crazy people or not crazy people, and everyone else as well. I think everyone who is interested in it should explore it to their heart's content. Let me know what you find. I might even care. But having said that, is it not a bit unusual that the Prime Minister of Israel felt it compelled enough to make multiple statements denying that he had anything to do with that? It's like that is at the very least a sign of where the public perception of the Prime Minister of Israel is right now, that he would have to come out and say, you know, of course, this had nothing to do with me. who would think to do that? I don't need to deny my involvement in the Charlie Kirk shooting, because it wouldn't even occur to me to think that that had happened. But it occurred to enough people that at the very least he felt compelled to make that statement. If you want to talk about the Israel-U.S. relationship in general, though, I would say that a very obvious example of who is the alpha male in the room when it comes to Bibi and Don is, remember last year when Netanyahu had a White House meeting with Trump and he gifted him the golden pager? And this was right after Operation Grim Beeper, where, of course, famously, the Israeli intelligence had implanted all of these fake pagers in Hezbollah supply lines and detonated them all, killing all these bad guys and maybe a few civilians. Who cares? Whatever. It was all for the good. And oh, here's a golden pager for you, Mr. Trump. That, to me, is the biggest sign of anything, that of who is controlling who in that relationship. As in, hey, we could kill you at any time, Mr. President. Anyway, I just thought that was a kind of funny and telling statement. Perhaps more substantially, the fact that Jared Kushner, obviously Trump's son-in-law, has literally lent his bed to Benjamin Netanyahu to sleep in before. And this was before, you know, before they were a political deal. It just, again, goes to show the extent to which there is a relationship there. And I think we know who's in charge of that. Having said that, yes, Mossad, I'm sure, has all sorts of operations and all sorts of things that it's doing. Probably, from my perspective, more important going forward is Unit 8200, which is the Israeli Cyber Command, NSA. I don't know what equivalent they would be in the U.S. system, but at any rate, the internet / high tech version of the spy state that is responsible for seeding all of these various companies that go on to become private companies that you later on find out were all started by Unit 8200 X members. And there's even, you know, I mean, it's a thing that's been talked about and written about for years, but it's still something that I think is underexplored. And to me, that's important because if anything, I think Whitney Webb makes this point. I won't put words in her mouth, but I think this is a point that I think I really started to think about because of her and her reporting on Epstein. Whatever Epstein was in terms of honey trap, intelligence, you know, asset, is less and less necessary as we move further and further into the 21st century, because these days the surveillance is already there. Everyone is already carrying surveillance around with them at all times, and everything that they do is being monitored and tracked and surveilled in various ways. And whatever evidence you need on someone who isn't involved in anything shady could be planted surreptitiously through, you know, internet backdoors and what have you. So it's becoming more and more and more about the technological side of the spycraft game. And on that front, Israel is already, I think, well ahead of most of its competition.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they definitely seem to be ahead. That story about the pager reminds me of the Epstein story with Bill Clinton painting.
Yeah.
You know that. And then the Bush painting. I mean, I almost feel like that was like a FU to who we think, you know, or the average person thinks is in power. It's almost like,
yeah, exactly.
I'm going to humiliate you and I have so much power over you that
you can't say anything about it. Yeah.
Isn't that for people who haven't seen it, you can Google it. It's literally Epstein in Monica's dress.
Clinton in Monica's
dress. That's what I meant. Clinton in Monica's dress. Yes. And then there's one of Bush, I believe, with like paper airplanes and the Twin Towers.
Yeah, I don't recall that one, but yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, it's like there's things that just are unexplained. And one thing about our community that we do well is that we're not afraid to ask the question. We're not going to dismiss that as a silly. We're like, no, there's something there. Over and over again, they're like the Pizzagate thing, right? Now there's people who are recirculating the conversation about Pizzagate because now they're seeing emails that have code words in them, right? And people are like, oh, you know, yeah, like maybe there was something there. You guys dismissed it, but yeah, maybe these were code words for something else. Yeah. And I mean, which I'm sure, you know, you've talked about Pizzagate in the past. That's not out of the realm of possibility, but
no,
I mean,
no. And to me, it's interesting to see the exact same people and the exact same parts of the web that would have even just a month ago dismissed anything related to that as total conspiracy lunacy and like the prime example of why we need to crack down and censor and stop people from talking online, etc. Because the, you know, that crazy guy who went into Comet Pizza with a gun, you know, and that has been the shining example of the craziness of these crazy conspiracy theories for years now. Those exact same people are now the ones that are saying, well, you know, actually, it looks like there's something to it. And precisely because, of course, they think this is points on their side of the political aisle, essentially, because they are the ones that are, again, excited about the anonymous sources reporting things about Trump. And they will take that as absolute gospel truth and et cetera. So there's political points to be scored. So I think people are willing to open the door on that conversation. But they still, of course, point to the craziness of the crazy people who thought there was a basement at Comet Pizza, et cetera. I'm sure you know about this, but for people who don't, there was a lot more to that Pizzagate story than came out in sort of the general popular discourse. There was a lot of crazy stuff tied in with Elefantis and the weird, you know, like Instagram posts and pictures and relations to various performance art acts and other things that were taking place at Comet Pizza and all of that. I mean, just stuff that absolutely, there was creepy and weird stuff. And, oh, maybe they were just edgy humor, ha ha ha, or something. But no, it really, where there's smoke, there's fire. Anyway, even beyond that, at the very least, yeah, the very same people who were dismissing that go, well, maybe it wasn't happening at Comet Pizza. It was happening on the island. Well, okay, at least the conversation has been broached now and people understand that this type of stuff was really taking place.
The thing that Candace says all the time, and it's funny because she just says what I've been saying to myself forever, because every time you go down a rabbit hole, it seems like the top of the pyramid is always pedophiles. People laugh about conspiracy theorists who talk about like sacrificing children and all this stuff. I'm like, it's not that hard to believe. Just look at everywhere. You dig deep enough in any industry, any weird upper class of people, there's always pedophilia. And I had, and Candace talks about his book a lot, Jeffrey, I forget what his name is. I feel bad not knowing his name, but he wrote the book, The Assault on Truth. Amazing book, The Assault on Truth. He was a psychologist and worked with Sigmund Freud's daughter at the archives, right? And then he finds this unpublished work. And this unpublished work exposes the fact that one of his theories, and I forget what the theory was, this theory that children were having these night terrors, right, were actually used to cover up the fact that these children that he was dealing with were being molested, and he basically covered it up, and he came up with this whole other theory that it was in their imagination because he didn't want to expose the elites and his friends in the industry and the community that he was a part of for being monsters. Jeffrey tells Sigmund Freud's daughter, Anna, he convinces her to publish it. And so he writes his book, The Assault on Truth, and his whole career is ruined. Everybody turns on him. He ends up writing books about pets because and animals because he had to just get away from everything. Basically, it kind of shined a negative light on somebody who was put on this pedestal of this great thinker and person who created all these great ideas and theories and whatnot. So, but it's very fascinating. If you
look, and what's the title again? The Assault on Truth?
The Assault, like Assault Rifle.
Assault on Truth. Sorry. Okay. Yeah.
The immigrant in me comes out sometimes. Sorry. The Assault on Truth. And it's very fascinating. I'm actually kind of surprised you haven't heard of it, but honestly, like, I would hear it from time to time, never really understood the importance of it. And then it was Candace who kept talking about it, kind of made me look into it a little bit more. And then eventually I'm like, why hasn't somebody interviewed this guy? So podcasting for a long time, you get creative on ways to get a hold of people, and eventually got a hold of him, had him on, told his story. And it's incredibly fascinating because it's like it kind of, you know, exposed Sigmund Freud as a monster. And have you heard any of this before?
Absolutely news to me. So yeah, once again, everyone thinks that I've seen everything, but I have not. but I will check that out. Yeah.
So this is actually the podcast. So it's a 5:30, okay. And that's what the cover looks like. I thought I had a clip that would come. There's a clip from it too. But it's really dark science, sexual abuse, and yeah, it's a fascinating you know read. Yep. And
I will check that out.
Much like when we constantly learn, much of history is bullshit. Do your own research.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that there's more to the Freud story than we were told in the public is not surprising to me in the least, but I would be interested to see specifically what has been included. But yeah, I mean, that just from the most rational sort of a priori without even getting into any of the specifics, it makes sense that anyone who wants to operate some sort of deep state, some sort of behind the scenes power behind the throne, would use compromat, if we're gonna, it's all KGB, I tell you, but would use, you know, dirt on people to control them. That makes perfect sense. If you're going to be dark and manipulative, you find the blackmailable stuff and you use that to control various people, right? And what could be more blackmailable? I mean, you could be all sorts of depraved and that could ruin your life and reputation, but there could be nothing that any society through, or many societies throughout human history, would ever condone is child assault or murder, right? So if you can get people involved in that, that would be the ultimate dirty material, which is exactly why you would expect that when you do start digging to the bottom of the deep state, you tend to find these types of things. And that, I mean, a much lesser example, but one that operates on the same principle, is about Skull and Bones. And we have all heard that, you know, part of the initiation ritual is to get into the coffin and to lay there masturbating while you tell your darkest sexual secrets in history. And to all your, you know, fellow, they used to be brothers under the skin, but now they let women in there. So I don't know if this ritual has changed or what have you. But anyway, they used to be brothers under the skin because they are all gone through this. So think about, you know, George W. Bush and George H.W. Bush and John Kerry all have laid in the coffin doing this. I mean, that's kind of crazy, don't you think? But hey, this is the way power operates, because then, you know, they all know each other's darkest secrets and all of that, and they all have dirt on each other, and then they all help each other out for the rest of their lives to make sure they all get ahead in accordance with the master plan. And so, again, it shouldn't be a surprise that when we dig to the bottom of the... we always talk about going up the power pyramid, but it should really be about digging down to the bottom, the depths of the deep state. And when you get there, you find the most grisliest stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. And it's so acceptable. Like, there was that Canadian fashion designer, Nyengard, maybe? He was like a part of some big, I think his name was Nyengard, but big Canadian fashion designer, big in the fashion world. I just happened to run into a documentary about it. And what I've heard about a lot of sex trafficking, and but I'm like, oh, this is a new one I haven't heard yet. And they're everywhere. Like, even in Portugal, in my country, there was a big Casa Pia scandal. Casa Pia was an orphanage, very similar to what happened with the Franklin scandal in Boise Town. It was an orphanage. And then there's actually still a soccer club called Casa Pia. It's in the first division. It's actually quite popular. And a lot of people don't, in America at least, don't know about the scandal. You tell people, like, you know about the scandal linked to that orphanage that started that soccer club? And they're like, no. And it's like all the highest politicians were linked to it. Everybody in media. And it's like this, the Beast of Belgium, right? That's another story. There's like endless amounts of this. And then it's like, and then the conversation always leads to, or at least in my head, is like, okay, is this just a way of power control in regards to like what you were mentioning? Is it blackmail? Is it like a way of just controlling other elites so then you can have control? Or is it a actual, what's the word I'm looking for? Effectuation with these things. Mm. And then they just also use it as blackmail.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. I mean, it very well could be a mixture. I can't speak to this because I'm not part of that club, thankfully. So I don't know. But it makes sense either way. And so, yeah, I'm just saying, like, from the rational perspective, if you're just thinking about it on the sort of the surface level, it makes sense. If you want to manipulate people, you find dirt on them, right? But yeah, the deeper question, you know, to what extent do they actually believe in this and whatever, magic occult rituals and blood, adrenochrome, you know, power, whatever, all that kind of stuff. Again, I do not know about that at the experiential level, so I can't speak to it, but I would imagine that there are people in this power hierarchy who genuinely do believe in this stuff and genuinely do believe in the dark power they're getting, whatever. But that's the kind of stuff, I don't know what to say. I can only speculate.
Yeah, it reminds me of something that Epstein said in the video about, he said something about the soul. I don't know if you remember him talking about that, but he said he's certain that there's a soul, right? So then it does lead you to think that maybe he is a true believer of like whatever they're doing is some sacrifice, spiritual ritual thing that might be more than just, hey, here's a way of controlling somebody by humiliating them or getting them to do something illegal. Could be. Now we control them. Yeah.
Could be. There could be a lot of different ways that that could play in. I mean, he could genuinely believe in souls, but believe that there's a hierarchy of souls, and or there are some people who have souls, and then there are the NPCs that don't count that you can manipulate, et cetera, which would play into various eugenical assumptions. Then again, it could all be the PR effort of, well, I know that the people want to hear this, so I'll say it, as opposed to a Homo Deus. What's that guy's name? Thankfully, I forget off the top of my head. You know who I'm talking about. The Israeli World Economic Forum guy who's always talking about transhumanism and people have no souls.
Harari?
Yes. No, Harari. Whatever. Anyway, I'm glad that I had that brain fart because I don't want to think about that guy. Yuval Noah Harari. Yeah, but exactly. He comes out and says all that stuff like, oh, there are no souls and we're just mechanical animals and everything. And everyone sees him for what he is. But Epstein sitting there in the PR interview is going to say, yes, of course, we all know we have souls.
Well, I've heard Peter Thiel talk about the devil and stuff like that. And it does seem like there's something to them thinking they're tapping in. Like, you know, of course, since the beginning of time, there's always been elites that feel like they deserve to influence society. They deserve to control society. They deserve to know the deepest secrets of society. And the rest of us are just peasants who you know, how they we don't deserve to know how reality works, you know. And that's what I find so fascinating about, like, the telepathy tapes and all these other things. I've had Rupert Sheldrick on in the past. I've had the doctor from the telepathy tapes, Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell, who her life's work was on the savant syndrome and non-verbal autistic kids and how they're communicating with their parents. So it's like, it all seems like, okay, there's secrets to the universe that we don't quite know yet, or they've been suppressed, or we're rediscovering them. But it also seems like maybe those powers that shouldn't be, as you say, could be potentially hiding that from us to make us feel like just meaningless people. That's why the flat earth debate, as silly as it was, I'm like, I kind of get it. Like, I get why they have this perspective of like, oh yeah, the elites want you to think you're insignificant. I'm like, I get that. I'm like, I could see that perspective where they kind of linked it to spirituality and the worldview. So it is fascinating. I mean, do you spend any time thinking about those things in regards to these other understanding of the universe and these maybe suppressed secrets to the public?
Right. Yes. Yes, I do. And I think that they are used manipulatively and obviously in knowing and conscious ways by people who want to more effectively control and other people. And I tend to think a lot of it is just rationalization for what people want to do, which is assert power and dominance over other people. And they find elaborate ways to do so. But I just came across one that was incredibly fascinating, interesting, thought-provoking, compelling, disturbing, etc. in various measures. I am reading The Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky for the first time, and I just got to the chapter on the Grand Inquisitor. And this is like a story within a story, so I guess you could probably just read this by itself, and perhaps I will exhort people to do that, although I'm going to finish the entire novel and let you know. But it's essentially the story of Jesus returns and meets with the Grand Inquisitor of the Spanish Inquisition. And the Grand Inquisitor lays out what has been done in Jesus' absence of the last 16 centuries at that point. And, you know, the people who have taken over and are now in charge and how they're going to kill Jesus again, because they don't need him, because he's going to spoil their perfect plan that they've created on the back of the thing that Jesus started, but it's now become this thing. And it's essentially all about how to get people to throw away. They will want to throw away their freedom to be controlled by these people in the name of, you know, Jesus and whatever, but it's not about that at all. It's about this manipulation and power game that has been woven around people over the past several centuries. And it's a fascinating and compelling little story. So I will just throw that out for people who want to think about this from the perspective of people who are in those positions of power, who do genuinely think that they deserve to rule over others and that it's good for the people that they are ruling over. I mean, they may not understand that. We'll never come out and say this, but this is what we are doing and they love us for it. And you know, it's hard to argue against that, because it seems in my nearly 20 years of doing this now, there is nothing that I have advocated for that is more controversial than freedom. I believe humans should be free. I believe we are created free and equal human beings that all deserve the right of sovereignty. We are sovereign beings, created as such, and that nothing can abrogate that. But there is no message that I have ever stated that gets more pushback than that. No, of course not. No, well, yeah, but no, but we need to have these people in charge, and we need to have certain power structures, and we need to have this, and we need to, you can't be totally free, and blah, blah, blah. And there's all these things that people put on top of that. They hate the idea of freedom. And if people read The Grand Inquisitor, you'll know which side of this argument you're on and which side I am not on.
So even your audience pushes back against that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would say there's probably maybe 1%, maybe less of my audience that truly actually believes in voluntarism and freedom. And everyone else thinks we just need to get the right people in power. We just need to vote harder, guys. It's baffling to me. It's absolutely, completely baffling to me. At any rate, it's baffling to me that these people continue to come back to the Corbett Report. Like, I don't know what you think I'm advocating for. I am not advocating for a better, more efficient government or a better leader. We just need to elect some sort of better, you know, hopium. No, that's exactly explicitly what I am against. But I get very, very, very little feedback from people who agree with that.
And this brings me back to the Jeffrey Epstein systems conversation, because that's exactly what they do. They convince you that the system's too complex for you to understand it. So trust in others. Don't trust in your gut. Yeah. Don't, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point that he makes, again, about the banking system, that the financial system. It's a lot of jargon, and it sounds very complex, and it's designed to turn people off and make them think that there's some kind of high-level math stuff that's going on that they couldn't possibly understand. And he says, no, it's all pretty straightforward. It's just a lot of jargon that's designed to make you essentially walk away. They don't want people to think about it, because if people knew how the banking system really operated, there would be a revolution overnight. Where have I heard that before? It's been said before, but there you go. You have Epstein on tape saying it. And he's right. You know what? He's right about that. It isn't this incredibly difficult to understand stuff. It is simple trickery that is being used. And unfortunately, most people, they would, if it's presented to them in that way, they'll say, of course I'm against that. But they aren't really. They want to give away as their sovereignty to other people to let them worry about it, because that's a lot of work. It's a lot of, I don't want to do that. Just tell me how to live my life. Just tell me where to go to sign up for my digital ID and get my face scanned and get my, you know, free money from government and whatever. And just let me live like a slave and I'll be happy. And unfortunately, a lot of people are like that.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why the legal system is so complex, for the reason that it's like, oh, you always need a lawyer because it's too complex. I don't get it, right? I know a guy, a police officer, he had a claim after he retired that he was racially, he was actually the first, I think, black police officer on the force. And he was racially not, he thinks for racial reasons, was not treated very well. But he couldn't afford a lawyer after he retired. He wanted to write a book or whatever about this whole thing. And then he's like, you know what, let me try to file this stuff on my own. He's like, I'm retired. I got plenty of time on my hands. And then he would work details sometimes. So I would see him because we do some road construction. And he would tell me, he's like, you don't understand the things you pay a lawyer to do. He's like, once you realize the scam, the thing that you're paying hundreds of dollars to fill out some form that you can figure out how to fill out. And he was like just going on and off, on and on about all these experiences with, like, you know, these things that lawyers charge you for that he learned how to do. And he's like, the whole thing's a racket. And I'm like, yeah, it probably is. But that's, again, goes back to keeping systems complex. So we always need somebody else, right? And I know you're probably got to go soon because your schedule's always so tight, which is good. It means you're constantly busy and you're, for good reasons. And but so for people listening who want to keep up with your work, you are back on YouTube thanks to the last time we talked. I'm just kidding. I don't know. I'm glad you are.
No, there. Honestly, yes. Honestly, it is because of the last time we talked. It was you who said, oh, by the way, you know, they just put me on. That was the thing that made me say, well, I'll try it. And I did. And so, yeah. I guess I either have you to thank or to blame for the fact yes, that I'm back on YouTube. But either way, it's all credit to you.
And so for people who want to keep up with your work, I'm sure you're going to say CorbettReport.com.
No, hit like and subscribe on my YouTube channel, guys. That'll do it. No.
You mean smash the like button. smash like
that. Sorry. I don't know the lingo these days. Hit the whistle thing on the, make this thing spin around and I've hit a bell and something rings. I don't know. Do it now. Yeah, go to CorbettReport.com, guys. That's where my work is. I do have an email list that is run by Substack, which up until this point has worked fairly well, but now people in Australia and the UK are apparently going to have to do their whatever digital scans or ID or whatever it is to use Substack. Yay, wonderful. So they're undermining another platform. But I did get an email from someone who says, well, I'm not going to, you know, give him my ID or whatever it is I got to do to be on Substack anymore. Is there anywhere else I can get your work? I said, well, yeah, I have this website called CorbettReport.com. You may have heard of. Everything I do and everything I post is there. So yes, you can just go there and you can find anything that I ever do. Having said that, I am on Substack. I'm on YouTube. I'm on BitChute. I'm on Odyssey. I'm on Rumble. I'm no longer on Rockfin because I guess they don't like people like me. I don't know, whatever. But
I don't even think they're, are they still even a thing? I feel like they
I don't know. To be honest, I never even noticed that they existed. I just had a channel there. So fair enough. I don't know. I never actually look at Rockfin. But I'm on a lot of platforms, but the best place is CorbettReport.com. And I will make the plea for the million, million, millionth time and probably million, million, million more. People, please learn how to use RSS and follow via RSS. You do not need a middleman. You do not need a YouTube or a Substack or a TikTok or a Twitter or an Instagram or anything else in order to follow me directly. Follow my RSS feed. It's directly from my server to your RSS reader. No middleman in between that can ever come in and unsubscribe you or any of that algorithmic manipulation. No, you can just get a feed of myself and whoever else you want to follow. And it's just all the posts from, you know, in chronological order. Imagine that. But no, everyone wants to be on social media these days.
Is there an app that you recommend for people to do that with?
I do not yet, but I do know Gabriel from Libra Solutions Network has been working on an RSS reader, and I'm going to be interested to see his development on that, and I might promote that specifically if and when he finishes that up. But at the moment, I would just say, you know, use whatever works for you. I mean, literally, there's a million different readers, and if you are a coder, you could code your own. It's an open source thing. You could make your own RSS reader if you were so inclined. But anyway, just experiment. Find what works for you and in your workflow.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, you don't need a middleman, and getting the content directly from the person is the only way to guarantee that you're getting all the content and nothing's being censored or suppressed. So, but thank you so much, James, for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking to you. Keep up the amazing work and subscribe to that RSS feed, because I'm sure you got some major projects. You've done some amazing projects. I'm sure you got some big projects around the corner. You always do. And
I just released my fake news awards. So if people haven't checked that out yet, please do.
Yeah, I was going to watch that. I think that came out today or my time today. Yeah. And check that out. It's hilarious. That's one thing that you don't get enough credit for is your humor. Like, people always talk about how, our dear friend Sam Tripoli, he talks about conspiracies, but he does it with humor. So, like, you know, you can kind of send people there. And I'm like, the video that went viral, that almost, you know, for many people, exposed people to James Corbett, was a hilarious 9/11 couple minute video. I'm like, it was all humorous. It was like, you don't get enough credit for your humor.
Thank you. No, I don't. You're right. No, it's Sam Tripoli. It's Jimmy Dore. It's the comedians. It's Dave Smith. It's people like that. Anyway, I am not a comedian by trade. Whatever. I'm happy to be the research guy. That's that nerd in Japan, right? Who reads a lot of books. Humor is an important part of who I am and what I do. So I'm glad that some people can recognize that.
And hopefully we see you on Kill Tony one day. Have you watched that show?
I don't really, but we'll see. I'll let you know.
well, thanks again, James. Hey, enjoy the rest of your day, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. Hey, take care. I believe in the ripple effect.